Welcome to the Veteran Next Door Live. Call now 865-243-8255 with your questions, comments, and stories. That's 865-243-TALK. And now your host, Randall Baxter.
Good morning and welcome to the Veteran Next Door Live. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and it's October 18th. It's a very special day in my life because my daughter, 35 years ago, was born. And it was an Alabama football game, and it was pouring down rain. And I decided I would stay in the hospital and watch that game on TV with my baby curled around my shoulders and around my neck. And I watched that football game, and I think the final score, I'm not sure, was 56-0 Alabama. But that's okay because I had Lori in my arms, and it was a wonderful day. So happy birthday, Lori. You're a special person, and I'm very glad you're in my life. Our topic today, that was 35 years ago, but, you know, a long, long time ago, we were having a problem. I was 8 years old when this was going on, 1962. And we were having a problem in a little island right below Florida. The gangsters were getting kicked out, and the businesses were getting kicked out, and the Ruskies were involved, and everything was going all to pieces. And all I knew was we had a president who was the best president in the world, and because my parents told me so. And the world almost came to an end. That's what we're going to be talking about today, is Cuba and the Cuban Revolution and what was going on. And we called it 13 terrible days in American history. It actually went on a little bit longer than that and was going on a little bit before that. But first, let's hear our national anthem, modern style.
Yeah.
In the 1950s, we're going to talk about some historic events that led up to the Cuban crisis. But in the 1950s, several Cuban families, wealthy families, or those involved with President Batista or Dictator Batista, were starting to migrate out of Cuba into Puerto Rico, into Mexico, into some of the other islands, mostly into Miami. When it came in, they wanted to be U.S. citizens, so this is something they had to learn. So listen up, it's the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And if my memory serves me right, when Christopher Columbus discovered the New World and the Spanish moved into the Caribbean so hard, they brought their Catholic religion with them. The majority of the people in Cuba at the time were Catholic. That has changed, I guess. I'm not sure exactly how many Catholic churches there are still in Cuba, but the people have changed and over the past 53 years. And one of the topics that we're going to be covering today, folks, if you're not 53 years or older, you may not have even existed had what we're going to talk about today gone bad. You might not even be here. And we didn't think we were going to be here either when we were just 7 or 8 years old. But anyway, let's finish this section off with our prayer for the morning, and then we'll get into our story.
Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you that you've given us this day to remember the brave ones who have protected us. And Lord, we thank you for those who have given their lives for our country and for countries around the world. We ask for your loving protection over those who are overseas. We ask for your protection for those who have finished their service and are here amongst us. We thank you, Lord, that you have given us the brave souls who will fight for the rights of our country. We ask that you bless this presentation this morning and that you be here amongst us. In your name we pray. Amen.
So here's the deal. We're going to be talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis today. And everybody thinks, okay, we're starting 1962, but we're not. We're not going to start in 1962. We're going to go all the way back to 1945. Now here's what I want you to remember. This is when we were children, we all sang this song, and maybe the children still sing it today, and I'm not going to sing it for you, but it's I'm going to let you listen to the first few lines of it. Well, your toe bone connected to your foot bone. Your foot bone connected to your heel bone. Your heel bone connected to your ankle bone. And your ankle bone connected to your leg bone. And you can take that song all the way up to the last two sentences. Your shoulder bone connected to your neck bone. And your neck bone connected to your head bone. And folks, that's what went on with the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that's how it has moved forward into Vietnam. That's how it has moved forward into some of the dictatorships that we had to overthrow in the Caribbean, and how we had to deal with the Cuban Missile Crisis. Everything was connected, all past events, and even to today's two of our presidential candidates, Mr. Cruz and Mr. Rubio, are children of what we're going to be talking about today. So stay tuned. We'll take a break and we'll be right back, and we'll be talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis. You're listening to Better Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now, get the book, World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half. Soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor. And read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323. Or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning need. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial, get your training on how to set this up, and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door live. Call 865-243-8255. That's 243-TALK. And now your host, Randall Baxter.
Welcome back to The Veteran Next Door. We're going to talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis today, 13 horrible days in American history. But before we get to that, you know, we need to find out, I told you a little bit of a poem a minute ago about your toe bone connected to the foot bone. So to really figure out what went on in Cuba, I didn't know all this when I was a kid. I was 8 years old. Most people don't even know it today. But at the end of World War II, not quite the end, in February, the German military was collapsing. The Russians were moving in across Germany. General Eisenhower was starting to think that maybe he didn't need to lose as many men, that the Russians were going to take care of the Germans for him. And he was thinking about stopping at the Elbe River and letting the Russians just go in and finishing the Germans off. And then the Americans and the Russians and the British met at Yalta. Now, Yalta, you don't have to look at a map. Maybe you do need to look at a map, but Yalta was in the Crimean Peninsula, which has been in the news lately. But anyway, at the Yalta Conference, Prime Minister Churchill Joseph Stalin and Franklin Delano Roosevelt met. And if you look at a picture, you can see, you know, Franklin Roosevelt didn't look good at all. He was sickly. But anyway, they met to talk about the future of the Eastern European countries under Soviet occupation. Now, anybody could see that things were starting to get to a point where, hey, there's some other confrontation coming on here. There's going to be two worlds, a communist world and a free world. And it had already been decided and discussed by February of 1945. Well, it wasn't long after that, not quite, well, a little, about 2 months later, President Franklin Roosevelt died. And when he died, Harry Truman took over. And Harry had not even been advised or was not even aware of the Manhattan Project and that we had atomic bombs. The vice president did not know. And when Franklin Roosevelt died, it was as soon as Harry Truman became president, that's when he learned about it. And it wasn't 3 weeks later that Adolf Hitler committed suicide. So the world's, you know, watching all these events going on. Okay. The World War II is coming to an end in Europe. And the president of the United States has passed away. And Hitler has committed suicide. Now, one of the guys who did not die at the time was named Stalin, Joseph Stalin. And we all know what kind of man he was. So, you know, a week after, about a week or 10 days or so after Hitler committed suicide, May 7th, Nazi Germany surrendered. It was called VE Day. And that didn't end the war. It changed the war. Japanese were still going, but all of a sudden now the two remain. And I always remember the look in the movie Patton with General Patton arm in arm with the Russian general to have a drink after they'd each called each other names, looking each other in the eye, knowing that they were going to be confronting each other soon, or thinking that they would be. So the Cuban Missile Crisis goes all the way back to that. But then on July 16th, not long after the end of World War II, the United States successfully tested the first atomic bomb in New Mexico. And guess what? Joseph Stalin looked at it and went, oh my gosh, look what they've got. And then after the Yalta Conference came the Potsdam Conference, which was 5 months after the Yalta Conference. And back then, now it wasn't Roosevelt anymore. It was Harry Truman. And Churchill was fading out. And Stalin was sitting there going, here I am, the only major leader of the war. The war is over now, and all the leaders are changing except me. But the leaders at the Potsdam Conference agreed to split Germany in half. There was an East Germany and a West Germany. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the confrontation between the communists and the free countries. Well, you know, 3 weeks after that, the United States dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. And Stalin went, oh, my gosh, they're using that bomb. They could use it on me, and I don't have one. Now, think about that for a minute. Then 2 days later, we used another one. Oh, Nagasaki. And the mission was to stomp the American deaths in World War II for the invasion of Japan. But I'm not sure that's what Joseph Stalin was thinking. Joseph Stalin was thinking, oh my gosh, maybe we're next. They're going to use it on us if we don't acquiesce or think about our negotiation process. They've got something we don't have. And then Japan surrendered. Hey, if you're going to bomb us into oblivion, we're just going to quit this war. We'll stop. We surrender. It's over. And everybody, you know, American, well, hey, we've got the atomic bomb. You listen to us. And then, almost a year from the Yalta Conference, a man named George Kennan, who was an American diplomat in Moscow, tried to explain to America what he understood about the Russian psyche and foreign policy. And here's what he said. All through history, it was his opinion that the Russian had always been impervious to logic of reason. But they had always been highly sensitive to the logic of force. And that was the man who was, you know, a key ambassador in Russia, sending messages back to Harry Truman about the Russians. And here the Russians were drawing lines. And then, not even a month later, Winston Churchill, who had, I think, been deposed at this time, or not deposed, had been voted out, or was on his way out, took a tour of the United States of America, and he went to Missouri. He just happened to be where the president came from, which was Missouri. And he warned the free world about the Soviet Union. He said the creation of satellite states in Eastern Europe constituted an iron curtain descending across Europe. So you know, Americans, we weren't hardly fazed about that. You know, because we weren't used to being surrounded by enemies like Russia was. And they still are. Sometimes they call them frenemies. But anyway, then George C. Marshall announced a plan in June of 1947 to rebuild Europe. How noble. Why would we rebuild Europe after we just blew it all to pieces? And the logic was, if we rebuild them, the trade will increase and our revenues will pick up, our gross national product will increase. So we should go in and rebuild Europe. Well, Stalin didn't like that. And he saw how West Berlin was prospering. East Berlin was not. So Joseph Stalin decided to prevent the land resupply of West Berlin in order to force the Western powers to give him de facto control of the full city of Berlin in the Soviet Union. So that's when the famous Berlin Airlift began. Now, again, this is a confrontation between the free powers and the communist powers. And Stalin began to see that, you know, I can't stop this. I can't stop this airlift short of war. And remember now, the Russians were highly sensitive to the logic of force. And that's always been, and that's what the ambassador was saying, is if you put them in a position where you're going to use force, they're very sensitive to that. And then April 4th, 1949, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization was formed. Can you see where the Russians would think, oh my gosh, these folks are setting up against us? So the Western Allies united all their zones of control in Germany and turned over governing authority to a new democratic regime. The new government was the Federal Republic of Germany, or West Germany. And, you know, I was wondering why they didn't call it the, you know, when I was little, I thought, why didn't they call it the Democratic Republic of Germany? Well, we are a republic and not a, before we're a democracy, and we had an effect on them, the Federal Republic of Germany, or West Germany. With Berlin part of that country, if you look at a map, Berlin was right smack dab in the middle of East Germany, kind of like an island. And then you move forward into the 1960s and look at Cuba, and they're right in the middle of American territory, an island. But then in 1949, backing up a little bit, the Soviets tested their atomic bomb, and the Americans went, oh my God, the Soviets have got a bomb. Will they use it? Well, we used it. But the Russians had to have it too to say, look, if you use it, we'll use it. And then they turned over the control of Germany, their part of Germany, to a communist German government, and they called it the German Democratic Republic of East Germany. And it had its capital in East Berlin. And it wasn't long after that the Korean War began. What's the Korean War got to do with World War II and Cuba? Well, think about it. Now the Russians and Chinese, who were communists, were nose to nose with Americans who supported freedom and democracy in Korea. And there were some interesting developments in Korea that we're going to talk about in the next segment before we lead up to the Cuban Missile Crisis. But, you know, folks, it is all connected. That toe bone is connected to that foot bone. That foot bone is connected to that ankle bone. And all these things were going on, and now we had the newly elected president, President John F. Kennedy, in 1960. But in 1950, we had a president who was nose to nose with Joseph Stalin and was trying to wrap up World War II and was being challenged in Korea. Had a little bit of a conflict going on in a little country called Vietnam. All things are connected, and that's what we're going to learn about in a minute. Folks, you're listening to Veteran Next Door Live. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now, get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half, soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor. And read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323. Or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually lived through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning need. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial, get your training on how to set this up, and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to The Veteran Next Door live. Call 865-243-8255. That's 243-TALK. And now your host, Randall Baxter.
Welcome back to The Veteran Next Door live. We're talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis, but before we get to the crisis, I thought we needed just to lead up to a couple of things. And one of those things was a conversation I had with Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd several months ago. I just want you to listen to this part of the conversation and see what was going on in the 50s that led up to the Cuban Missile Crisis. Before we get into the Cuban Missile Crisis and the possible destruction of the modern world as we know it, I want to go back to our interview with Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd, who wrote a book called Operation Broken Reed.
Last week, we discussed the mission that he was on of 10 Americans who were guarded by 67 National Chinese Rangers posing as North Korean soldiers in order to gain access to Red Chinese and North Korean military deployment in North Korea. All of the National Chinese Rangers were killed, and 9 of the 10 Americans. The mission ultimately led President Harry Truman to change military strategy to be one of containment instead of conquering North Korea and taking the chance of an all-out nuclear war with the USSR. At the time, all the major cities in the world were targeted for destruction in the early 1950s. And we're going to continue our conversation with Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd. We've got Lieutenant Colonel Arthur Boyd with us today. He's spoke with us last week in our show about Korea, and he is the author of a book called Operation Broken Reed. And he's with us today. He's from Niota, Tennessee. Is that right, sir?
That's correct, sir.
Colonel Boyd, I do want to thank you for joining us. I just want to finish our conversation. There were so many things that we did not have time to cover last week that I think our listeners need to hear. But as you remember, and I know you've remembered it for 47 years, but you had gone on a mission into Korea with some other Americans that I have already told our listeners about again today, and you had found that inside the mountains of North Korea, there were somewhere between 700,000 to 1 million Red Chinese troops embedded into the hills all the way up to and through Manchuria.
That's true.
Well, do you have any remarks to make about that before we get started?
Well, Ron, I appreciate the opportunity to be on your program here. And we might go beyond a little bit beyond the North Korean border into Manchuria, if you'd like.
Okay. What was going on there?
Well, the mission, Chinese operatives from the Broken Reed mission, who ranged from northwest Korea into Manchuria, discovered that there were Soviet aircraft which were parked on a tarmac at Mukden, which is loaded with atomic weapons. And there were orders from given to a Soviet officer that was in Manchuria at the time, a senior Soviet officer, had been issued the authority to use the atomic weapon had the UN forces initiated an offensive action to drive the Chinese forces back into Manchuria. It was kind of a airline thing.
Well, Colonel Boyd, that's kind of disturbing. You said something there I need to go back and revisit. You said that a Russian officer had been given authority to make the decision on whether or not to use the nuclear arsenal?
That's what the report that came from an operative stated, yes.
So the Soviet leaders had handed over the power to launch to a military man.
That's right.
Wow. Didn't we have a movie about that sometime along the way? What was that old black and white movie? But anyway, a few days after your mission was over, Harry Truman made a note in his diary concerning military strategy. Do you remember that?
I sure do.
What did it say?
Well, the intelligence reports which were received by President Truman indicated that the Chinese and Soviet governments had used the ceasefire to build up a formidable enemy force under the guise of seeking a peaceful end to the Korean War. And on the evening of 27 January 1952, Truman wrote a scathing entry in his personal journal. That can be found in Box 333, PSF, at the Truman Library. Now, in his entry, Truman designated 10 communist cities as targets. Under the President's orders, General Curtis LeMay, the commanding general of the Strategic Command, was given the responsibility of destroying those cities had the Soviets used an atomic weapon in Korea. The Korean War then could have turned into a global nuclear holocaust. Millions would have died.
Okay, but General LeMay was not given the authority to decide. He was given the order to do it if something happened and if the president told him to. Is that correct?
That's right, to put his aircraft on the flight line on a ready condition and armed with atomic weapons to do as the president ordered.
So a Russian commander who did not have to report to the boss could have triggered a nuclear war, which would have automatically triggered Harry Truman to tell General LeMay to take those cities out.
That's right.
The things we do. Okay. Your mission that we have talked about last week and a little bit this week helped Harry Truman stop that madness. Is that correct?
That's right. It absolutely did.
And
convinced him that had we gone forward in the war, pushed forward, it would have resulted in an expanded war.
Okay. And then he told you to be quiet about it, not to tell anybody. And if you told anybody, you could be put in prison?
Well, I was under national security orders, which were issued by President Truman, to not divulge anything about Operation Broken Reed for 46 years. Well, 47 years passed before I told my wife what had taken place, and keeping the mission a secret for almost a half century equated to a tour in hell.
Well,
my life has been fraught with nightmares and flashbacks of the mission, of having to kill 10 young Chinese men, of watching my buddies die, of trying to scrape the blood, bone fragments, and blood tissue of a team member from a flight suit, of knowing that a small UN unit had been wiped out during an attempt to rescue us, coming very near death from a bullet fired by a general in the Communist Chinese Army. I was ordered to bite the bullet. Otherwise, I'd have three hots and a cot in a federal prison for life.
So a threatened execution by a Korean general, the annihilation of a rescue force of people that came to help you, the visual deaths of your teammates, including the death of someone really close to you in the cold air where the blood and pieces of body froze to your uniform, and a long walk with a bullet hole in your leg and two wounded soldiers, and then having to kill five young Chinese soldiers, and then being told to be quiet about it, had an effect on you?
Well, sure did. Like I said, I've had nightmares and flashbacks ever since, but I have had some very effective counseling over the last 10 years.
Well, what happens to your mind and your body when you're holding a secret like that over time?
Well, you relive it. There's no way to describe to anyone that hasn't been there. You see the scene in your mind. You can actually taste and smell the whole scene. It's without description, but it's a replay of what happened, what you went through, and that keeps coming back. And that of course is the flashback thing, but it also occurred.
And that's just the story of one American soldier who was put through this personal turmoil and threatened with his own security and safety and his own livelihood if he ever told a story. And it makes you think, well, how is that connected? How is that connected to the Cuban Missile Crisis? Remember now, what Colonel Board said was that he had learned that a Russian general had a whole bunch of planes right across the Yalu River loaded with nuclear bombs with nobody to order him not to use them if he chose to. And that, you know, that was in the 1950s, early 1950s. You know, and it wasn't long after that. You know, he talked about it being in January 1952. And President Truman was trying to contain this war. And remember now, his ambassador in Russia was saying that the Russians were impervious to logic of reason. Hey, don't put your... You know, don't let this thing get out of hand. Don't put your general down there in command of a whole bunch of planes with the sole authority to use them if he wanted to. But they were highly sensitive to the logic of force. So Harry Truman, I'm not sure he did it because of that, but it seems to fit. On November 1st, 1952, under Harry Truman's command, the United States successfully tested the first hydrogen bomb. Russians didn't have a hydrogen bomb at the time, although they were working on it. But Truman said, hey, Joseph Stalin, watch this. And they blew up something called Ivy Mike. And it was 650 times more powerful than the bomb dropped at Hiroshima. It would take New York City out just a snap of a finger. New York City would be gone with the first hydrogen bomb. So Joseph Stalin was looking at that. And then Harry Truman said, oh yeah, by the way, bye-bye, I'm not president anymore. I want you to meet General Eisenhower. So General Eisenhower, and remember now, General Eisenhower is the one that wanted to stop the American troops at the Elbe because he didn't want any more American lives lost. And the Democrats had been in power for a long time, and that's one of the reasons he decided to run as a Republican, just to break the monotony. But he became president in January of 1953. And it wasn't 2 months later, Joseph Stalin died. I bet Eisenhower was clapping his hands. He probably didn't do it in public, but he's saying, great, Stalin's out of here. But, you know, that sparked a leadership crisis in the Soviet Union. Who's going to take his place? Well, at the same time, in July, on July 27th, almost to the day, 3 years and 1 month, from the time they invaded Korea, the Korean War armistice was signed. And the hostile parties during the Korean War agreed to an armistice, not a peace treaty. And as of today, that war is technically still going on. So the knee bone is connected to the thigh bone. But anyway, so the Korean War is still going on. We almost dropped nuclear bombs. Truman fired MacArthur because MacArthur was going to go across that river and attack the Germans over there. And those nuclear airplanes were just a little bit over the river. And MacArthur was going to go over there and fight them. And if he had crossed that river and gone in, there's a real good chance that they would have been stopped with nuclear bombs because they really knew that they couldn't stop the American army. The only thing that they could stop the American army with was the bodies of Chinese soldiers. Or they could nuke them. Americans have nuked people. Why can't we? So that's the problem that Truman had. But anyway, we're going to come back to some more of those problems here in a minute. The bones are all connected. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door Live. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll be right back.
Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars by the veterans themselves. The Veteran Next Door. You love the show. Now get the book. World War II, Volume 1, 1939 to 1946. Read about how our veterans attempted to free children trapped by fascist countries. Learn about the supermen we sent to liberate the world from the crimes of World War II. Stories of Pacific land battles on the land and the sea, battles in Europe, land in the air, survival in the ocean, when a ship sinks and one breaks in half. Soldiers who deserve the Medal of Honor. And read the story of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee, when many soldiers came home and had to deal with a corrupt county government and prove the need for our Second Amendment. Stories told and retold from the battlefronts of America's wars. Be sure to get your copy at Amazon.com. The Veteran Next Door, Stories from World War II, Volume 1, 1939 through 1946. Don't miss one word of The Veteran Next Door.
You know, if you already have the book, I hope you're enjoying it. But a lot of people ask me, do they have to order through Amazon.com? Answer is no. You can get it direct from me and have it autographed. All you have to do is call 865-525-2323. Or you can go to my website at www.theveterannextdoor.com. And those are all little letters, no spaces, theveterannextdoor.com. Makes a great gift for birthdays, anniversaries. You know, I get emails from people that said they've bought and read the book and they've learned more about their parents by reading the experience of other people during World War II. I think you'd enjoy it too. So give us a call, 865-525-2323, or order the book online at theveterannextdoor.com.
If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com or call 865-525-2323. Or you can pick them up at the Veteran Next Door store at 4812 Asheville Highway. Copies can be purchased as individual shows, multiple copies of the same show, or as a series. What better way to share time with the kids than by listening to the experiences of people who actually live through historic events, like the Battle of the Bulge, World War I, Knoxville during the Civil War, Vietnam as told by soldiers who were there, the Cuban Missile Crisis, Afghanistan, and Islam in the 20th century. Each show is hosted by the Veteran Next Door host, Randy Baxter, describing the history-making events and introducing you to people who experienced the event firsthand. Purchase the shows one at a time or in sets by topic or mix and match to suit your learning need. For a list of available shows, call 865-525-2323 or contact Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Are you a licensed life insurance agent anywhere in the United States? Are you a Medicare specialist, final expense agent, captive agent, or independent broker? I have a software package that you're going to want. It's by Estate Docs Pro, and it allows you to establish a revocable living trust for your clients, and you become their go-to person for estate planning and financial planning. You can get a free 30-day trial of this software with training, and all you have to do is ask. You can call me at 865-525-2323, or you can email me at randallbaxter@randallbaxter.com or www.estatepositioningservices.com. Get your 30-day trial, get your training on how to set this up, and watch your income go up. Remember, there's absolutely no cost to you as the agent to learn this software program. No commitment, no obligation. But once you see how it works, you're going to be glad you made the call. Call 865-525-2323 or get in touch with Randall Baxter at randallbaxter.com.
Now back to the Veteran Next Door live. Call 865-243-8255. That's 243-TALK. And now your host, Randall Baxter.
Welcome back to the Veteran Next Door live. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we're leading into the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we're talking about the events leading up to that. We've gone through the 1950s, but in right in the middle of all of this, and Eisenhower took over as president, and Joseph Stalin died 2 months later of stroke. All of a sudden, we're looking at this big country who's got these atomic bombs, who's in control of half of the free world, or what used to be the free world, with Churchill screaming about the Iron Curtain, and us testing hydrogen bombs. And a man named Nikita Khrushchev became head of the United Soviet Socialist Republic, the USSR. He grew in power from 1953 when Stalin died to 1958. By 1958, he eventually was the premier. So anyway, one bone's connected to another one. After Nikita Khrushchev became head of the Soviet Union, West Germany joined NATO. I guess they were saying, hey, we better get under your skirt or under your protection here so that we can be safe. And West Germany began the process of rearming, which scared the Russians and Eastern European countries to death to realize that it, not quite 10 years after World War II, the Germans were starting to rearm. Oh, my God, here they go again. So not long after NATO was formed, which NATO actually was formed in May 1955, West Germany joined. So in 1955, Russia, or the Soviet Socialist Union, formed the Warsaw Pact. And he said, okay, you got a club, we'll have a club. And if you all want to go to war against us, these are the folks that will join us. If you're going to come after us with all these people, we'll come at you with all these people. So then the Warsaw Pact was formed, and Eastern European allies said, okay, NATO, we're here too. But then something started happening. One of the reasons Khrushchev gained power in Russia was that something called de-Stalinization. And he put on a secret speech held at the 20th Party Congress of the Soviet Communist Party. And Khrushchev began to attack the repressive policies of Joseph Stalin. And what that became known was the Khrushchev thaw. So he said, let's lighten up on the Russian people. And then 1 year later, the Hungarians said, hey, the Russians are starting to lighten up on everybody. Well, maybe we need to break away from Russia at this time. So the Hungarian Revolution occurred in November 10th, 1956. And the Hungarian people launched, it's a massive uprising against the Hungarian government, which was a puppet of the Soviet Union. The government of Hungary initially fell. The Soviet-supported Hungarian government fell, but the war-packed forces eventually overwhelmed the revolutionaries. NATO, fearful of starting World War III, did not intervene. Now think about what that told the Russians. Remember now, the Russians are impervious to logic of reason and highly sensitive to logic of force. And they go in and use force. And what does the West do? Nothing. They just say, sorry, Hungary, you're behind the curtain. Well, something else also happened. There was some trouble in the Middle East. And this is all leading up to you know, if you're wondering what effect the Cuban Missile Crisis might be having on the Middle East today. Well, they're sort of connected, and I'll show you why here in just a minute. But back in 1956, there was a Suez Crisis. And Britain, France, and Israel launched a military gambit to undo the Egyptian nationalization of the Soviet or the Suez Canal. Now, you might not know what nationalization means, but if you nationalize an industry, you take it away from the people who own it. It might be Americans, or in this situation, it might have been the French and the British and Israelis, maybe some Americans. But Nasser nationalized the Suez Canal, and he said, hey, by the way, you don't own this anymore. We do. Kind of like in the Panama Canal. We own the Panama Canal, but it was nationalized. Then turned over to Chinese management, I think. But anyway, so in the Suez Canal, everything was nationalized. So there was a problem there. And the Russians were watching, trying to decide what to do. So you know what they did? Khrushchev put out a speech. It's 1956. In a meeting with Western ambassadors at the Polish embassy in Moscow, Khrushchev famously said the Soviet Union would bury the West. And many in the West misinterpreted the phrase as a threat of massive nuclear war. But the actual quotation described how the proletariat, after rising up and destroying the bourgeois, would bury the corpse of capitalism. But that's not what we saw. We saw the Russian president saying, we will bury you, which we thought that he was going to use his bombs on us. And then the Russians launched a spacecraft. The Soviet Union launched the first man-made satellite into orbit. Now, this scared the Americans to death. Oh, my God, what's going on? We got the Russians in charge. The Russians got bombs or... they're controlling Hungary. You know, things are going on. Now they're beating us into the sky. And then Khrushchev delivered a speech demanding that NATO pull out of West Berlin. Hey, you get out of here, which was the start of the Berlin Crisis. And things were going on, though. All this time, all through the world, something was going on in Cuba. But they didn't have the world stage. What was going on in Cuba at the time was they had a president named Batista, and he was actually a dictator, and they had gone through a series of dictators back and forth ever since the Spanish-American War. And Cuba had gone from a Spanish possession to an American possession, and Americans had let it go from, you know, tobacco and sugar and back to tobacco and back to sugar, but the sugar plantations dominated. And so did, you know, Cuba was so close that you could get outside of American law just by going to Cuba, and you could gamble and you could drink and you could party. You could have a good time. And it had turned over a lot of the control to some of the criminal elements of the United States. That's where if you were a gangster, you could go there and be pretty safe under Batista's protection. And slowly the Cubans were starting to leave. Not all the Cubans, but the wealthy Cubans were starting to realize that there was trouble brewing. There was going to be a revolution nearby or soon. And that this revolution actually occurred January 1st, 1959. Cuban Revolution, and President Batista fled the country. So those are the things we're going to be talking about in the next hour. We're talking about the nuts and bolts of the Cuban crisis, missile crisis. You have seen or heard some of the events leading up to it. And Cuba was just like something way off in the distance that was just a minor thing going on in America in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Caribbean Sea, and really wasn't tied directly to world events until Castro and Khrushchev started talking, and that's what we're going to get to next. So here you are. You're listening to The Veteran Next Door. We're talking about the Cuban Missile Crisis and events leading up to it. Stay tuned for the second hour, and we'll be right back.